Hey, what's up, you guys? Welcome back to Teen Fish. This is the podcast led by a teen about teen things. Today, we are going to be talking about the Netflix original In the Tall Grass, which is based upon a novella by Stephen King and his son. So without further ado, let's get this fish started.
Teen Fish. Fishes.
I'm just going to throw out that this podcast is rated S for spoilers. Yes, I did steal that from the Screenfish podcast. Steve, don't come for me. That just means that there will be spoilers in this podcast. So if you want to watch the movie, go do that first and then come back and listen to this. Today, I am joined by Jacob.
Hello.
And yeah, let's, I guess, get into it. So right off the bat, how do you feel about this movie?
In the beginning, I absolutely hated it.
Perfect. The end.
Yeah, no, in the beginning, I really did not like it. In the middle, I really still didn't like it as much.
Mm-hmm.
But in, like, within, like, the last 30 minutes of the movie, I was like, oh, now all of this makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, I hate a good 3/4 of this movie. But the last quarter made it decent.
Yeah, it's definitely kind of one of those movies. It was definitely slow the first act, the first, you know, half an hour, 40-ish minutes. It's about an hour and 45 minutes total. So the first, like, half an hour, 40-ish minutes, it was definitely, it was kind of slow and kind of weird, but it did pick up and, you know, kind of get strange, and it made you think, and I think it was pretty cool. I've never read the book or the novella that it was based on, so I don't know how accurate it was, but I feel like normally Stephen King movies are pretty accurate. So I guess we'll start talking from the beginning. It starts off with this girl, Becky. Is it Becky? Okay, good. I couldn't remember if it was Becky or Becca.
Becky.
So it does start off with this girl named Becky who is pregnant. She's driving with her brother Cal. They're on a trip to San Diego. We later find out that they're actually going there because Becky is pregnant and she kind of found a very nice family who wants to adopt the baby. And they're, you know, taking that trip to, I guess, for her to give birth and then give up the baby for adoption. And they make a stop just outside of a chapel. On the other side of the road, there's the tall grass. And they hear a boy yelling for them to help because he's lost, and they end up going in, and then things start to get weird. So this grass area, this field, is almost like a weird time warp maze of like weird
go back in time.
Yeah, it's so weird because throughout the movie you kind of see things which at the first time you're seeing it, you're like, oh, you know, kind of whatever, or oh, that's, you know, kind of spooky, but, you know, don't really think much about it. And then later on, you see it again. But when you see it later on, it's actually the present at that time. So it's like, it's kind of weird. It's, for example, at one part, I believe it's Cal sees a dead dog.
Yeah.
You know, has like bugs kind of crawling on it, eating it, whatever.
Life.
And later on in the movie, when Becky's boyfriend or ex, or I don't know exactly how they are, his name is Travis, he actually goes into the field because he's, you know, following after them. He sees the dog, same dog, but the dog is alive. And it's actually later on in the movie. So it's kind of a weird time travel-y field of maize grass. Like, it's really weird.
Yeah, it's a little messed up.
So I kind of want to, I think that's kind of what I want to first talk about is, like, you know, besides this movie, like, where have you seen that kind of, like, you know, time is, I don't think relative is the right word, but, like, time is, like, isn't kind of real, almost.
I mean, in Endgame, when they go back.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's actually good, yeah.
And then they fight, because the current Thanos is dead.
Yeah.
Because he gets his head chopped off.
Snatched.
And then in the middle of the movie, the young Thanos or whatever, like past Thanos comes, and then they have to fight past Thanos, who is still currently on the same mission as current Thanos was.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like that.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like it's, you know, time is a topic that we've seen before in movies, but I feel like it's not one that's super popular.
Yeah, no.
Like, you know, obviously, some ones that I can think of are Endgame, Back to the Future.
Oh,
no. Period. I don't, that's kind of the only ones I can really think of right off the bat. But I always feel like it's cool how it's portrayed in each movie that it's in, because I feel like it's always kind of similar, but it's always slightly different.
Yeah.
For example, in this movie, to me, it felt almost like a video game,
to be honest,
where, you know, in kind of on one part of it, you know, Cal and Becky die.
Yeah.
And then it's almost like it kind of restarts,
yeah.
Or like, you know, reloads the game, whatever. Like you start that level over again, if that makes sense.
No, that makes sense. They died. How many times do they die? They die like
twice. Well, we've seen, I believe, twice.
Yeah, because he keeps killing him over and over.
Yeah, I feel like we see Becky's like old, like dead body.
Mm-hmm. You also see like everyone's old dead body.
Well, I think that was just Cal, where it like panned out and there was like a bunch of like
dead bodies,
skeletons, and I think that was just Cal. So with him, I think it was like 1, 2, 3. I want to say 5 or 6. But Becky, I feel like we see her like rotting corpse once, and then I think we just see her die, but I feel like she didn't really die.
Yeah.
Who made it out?
It was just a little boy, Toby. Because then Toby.
Becky didn't get out?
No, because then Toby went back in the past and told them not to go,
yes,
and they didn't
go,
and then they continued on their trip to San Diego.
That's right, yeah. So we see Becky's like dead corpse, and then Becky die once, but we see Cal die once and a bunch of his like dead bodies. So it's like it's so weird, but it's I don't know, I found that it was like kind of cool that it's almost like you restart the level.
Yeah, like every time you fail.
Yeah, every time you fail, every time you, you know, would die or get a game over.
Yeah, that girl got her head crunched.
Yeah, oh, the mom. I don't even know what her name was.
I don't know, but she's like, don't worry, it's flesh, it's only grass, and like and I was like, what?
Yeah, this movie was like, I don't know, it was definitely one where you kind of really have to, like, you really have to think about what's happening, or it's just kind of like you're sitting there and you're just kind of like, what is this?
Yeah, like this garbage movies.
So besides time, this movie really kind of talks, like, it's a movie that really, what's the word, like, it focuses on choices. And how they can affect, you know, obviously what happens. I believe, you know, it's called the butterfly effect, where, you know, one small choice can, you know, cause such like a drastic event to happen. In one part where we see this is, it's going to be hard to explain, but I guess like the main Becky and Cal that we meet and we see when they're walking through the grass, Becky gets a phone call and she answers it, and it's kind of like scratchy and scraggly. So she doesn't know who it is, but it's actually
herself.
A future version of herself calling, saying, don't let Cal hurt him. Like, don't let him, don't let them fight. Like, and it cuts out, and, you know, she's really confused because she doesn't understand that it's her.
Yeah.
She especially doesn't understand that it's her calling from the future.
Yeah.
So she's like kind of taken aback by that phone call. And eventually, Cal and again, her boyfriend, Travis or ex, whoever, they do end up fighting. And right after they fight, like it really becomes like a crap show.
Yeah. It's like really bad.
Which that's what future Becky is like referencing when she calls the past one.
Yeah.
So it's like that scenario where in future Becky's like timeline, Cal and Travis fought. Travis fell off the roof. We find out that he didn't die.
Yeah.
But he was, you know, injured, and, you know, Cal's, like, weird.
Yeah.
But we know that in that timeline, like, they did fight. So if Becky had actually listened and, you know, was able to stop them from fighting, like, you know, they could have, like, almost, quote-unquote, like, won the game,
mm-hmm.
if that's even possible. Or if that could have been possible for them. But unfortunately, she didn't, so it followed the same timeline that it has before.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, yeah, that's just kind of explaining about what happened. But I kind of want to talk about how, you know, the choices that they made. How do you think the choices they made could have, like, differently affected the outcome of, you know, the kind of, I guess, main Becky and Cal?
How do I think their choices could have been made differently?
Yeah, almost, yeah. I guess if you were, like, in the scenario, what, I guess, a different choice you would make
after
watching it?
Well, when... Is it Cal, the one that was in the car with Becky in the first one?
So Cal's the one that had the
glasses. If I was Cal, I would have listened to what the people were saying, and I wouldn't have ran. Like, I think it was Toby that told him, don't run. What was it? You know when Cal was running through the thing calling to Becky, and then after he's like, don't run, it doesn't work, blah, blah. And then he ends up getting lost, and then even more in a worse position. I wouldn't have ran. I would have listened, because obviously he knows better than what I do.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have listened, and then maybe it would have played out a little differently, because, like, he got lost in the first place, and then it messed up his situation even more.
I feel like there was just, like, a lot of common sense that, like, they really didn't use in this movie. The characters, obviously. I, for example, like, myself, like, I would never have gone in there in the first place.
Yeah, well, like, who yells... Who goes in the grass to find the lost kid? You're supposed to shout at the people.
Exactly.
And then they come to you.
Exactly.
That doesn't make sense.
There was just definitely a lot of times where I was just kind of like, really? Like, you did that? Like, you should have done this? Like, that sort of that sort of stuff. I feel like this movie is definitely, like, it almost seems like it could be a video game.
Yeah, to be honest.
Like, in the sense where there's obviously the Mortal Kombat games. There's a few movies based off of the Mortal Kombat games. I feel like this is almost, like, this could be
a video game movie. Yeah.
Where, you know, honestly, if this was a video game, I wouldn't mind playing it, you know, seeing how it is. Like, there are definitely a lot of games out right now that are... choices based.
Yeah, Telltale.
For example, there's a company, I don't think they're...
No, they got shut down.
Yeah, called Telltale Games. They made a Walking Dead game, a Batman game, among others. And it was very, you know, choice-based.
Yeah.
So whatever choices you made, you know, differentiated the outcome of different events and scenes and, you know, stuff that happened. And I feel like that's kind of gotten pretty popular nowadays. Yeah. So watching this movie, like, definitely reminded me of that. And, you know, I feel like it could be a video game.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to talk about The Rock.
Mm.
So in what I'm guessing is, like, the middle of the field, there was this rock that kind of almost looked like, you know, something... I don't know what the word is, but it's like something where, you know, a group of people would kind of come and, like, almost worship. Like, it seems kind of like that.
Like a shrine.
Yeah, that's a good word for it, a shrine. You know, the rock had, like, weird carvings in it, which later on when we're looking at them. Yeah, exactly, yes. Prophesizing, you know, what's going to happen. Some of the little pictures were of, like, Becky, or technically we don't know that it was her, but of a person giving birth, and then, I mean, the baby's on, like, a spike or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Almost like prophecies of, you know, prophecies, you know, something that's supposed to happen in the future. you know, has great meaning. So this rock has shrine-esque to it, and with the prophecies on it. And apparently, if you touch this rock, you know everything.
To an extent.
Like, within the field, at least.
Yeah, and then it makes you, like, stay there. You have to stay there.
Yeah, it's almost like...
it's like selling your soul.
I mean, you know, it's, you know, kind of falling into that temptation of, like, oh, this rock is, you know, gonna... It kind of relates to, like, the story of Adam and Eve of, like, you know, oh, if I eat this fruit, like, I'm gonna know everything. Yeah. So it's like, you know, if you touch this rock, you're gonna know everything about this field. You're gonna be able to, like, talk to the grass. The grass is gonna be able to talk to you and, like, bring you to, like, you know, other places in the grass, like, easily. It's definitely very weird, and I find in that sense, you know, it kind of has, like, biblical undertones to it. Obviously, this is, you know, kind of more of a supernatural thing, which Bible isn't. But, like, I definitely kind of picked up on, you know, some things that I could relate to the Bible. And it was just, like, very weird because we know that in one of the, like, time frames, Toby or Tobin touched the rock because he brought Cal to the... No, I think it might have been Cal that he brought to the rock first. And then later on, we know that Tobin's father, in one of the time frames, touched the rock.
Yep.
And he kind of... he kind of... The power that he got from it, he kind of used for bad. Whereas Tobin, it seemed like he was using it more for good, trying to, like, help Cal and help Becky. Whereas Tobin's father, I believe his name was Ross.
Yeah.
He was using it more as, like, you know, I know everything. Like, I can do everything. The grass is telling me to, you know, kill you, so I'm going to kill you. Like, that sort of, you know, he definitely used it for evil. And at one point, we almost see Cal touch it, but he, like, gets stopped. And at that point, that's kind of when we really see Ross. Again, that's Tobin's father.
Yeah.
That's kind of when he really goes evil, goes crazy, and he ends up killing Tobin's mother, or his wife, by, like, literally taking his hands and, like, crushing her skull, which is
a paper mache fun
Saturday
project.
Night. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a paper mache project.
So, like, you know, he's using his powers for bad, and he just kind of starts going crazy, and it's like, you know, time to kill all of you. And they're, like, escaping, and they end up finding this, like, really old, abandoned, battered up bowling alley, where for a little bit kind of feels like a safe haven for them, where they're able to relax and, you know, kind of, I guess, not be in, like, immediate danger. Which, especially for Becky, is really good. Again, she's pregnant and, you know, definitely the stress and the heat and just moving around so much is not really good for the baby.
Yeah.
Which, you know, having that bowling alley being, you know, considered, like, you know, a safe place for them. I want to talk about something that we may view as, like, a safe place can become unsafe easily, if that makes sense. Like, you know, for example, they were able to sit down in the bowling alley for a bit. Yes, you know, Cal and Travis did fight, but it was a safer place for a bit.
Yeah,
and then Ross showed up and was like, LOL, I'm going to get you guys. Why do you think, quote unquote, safe places can be affected in negative ways, I think?
For a safe haven? I mean, like, you obviously, you go to that safe haven because it's safe. So I feel like eventually once people realize, like, where you're going to get away from things, like, say, like, bullying, per se.
Okay.
Like, you know how you might go to, like, I don't know, say, like, you go to, like, the, like, computer lab to stay away. That's, like, your safe haven. It's the computer lab to stay away from the bullies. And then it's, like, eventually they'll, like, notice, like, oh, this is where they want to go to be safe.
Yeah, they catch on, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like people will catch on to a safe place when you're trying to get rid of those negative people. So those negative people or negative thing can eventually pick up on what is going on.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it just starts to, maybe the negative things just start to like, infiltrate your safe place, like, at home. Your home could be, like, a safe place, but then, say, like, your parents start to argue. That's, like, the people within your safe place or the things within your safe place start to become negative, and that could make your, like, that could make your safe haven, like, not so safe anymore. Like, yeah. Could make it worse, you know, so.
And then, I guess, why, or I guess you actually know, you kind of answered that. And then to jump off of that, how do you think you affect your own safe place?
By the thoughts I bring into the safe place.
Yeah,
by the thoughts that I bring into the safe place is how I affect my safe place. Also, what I do in my safe place affects my safe place. How I feel, what's going on in my life, like that kind of stuff would be like the kind of things that I would do to affect my own safe place.
Yeah, I definitely noticed throughout the movie, the baby that Becky has, I'm going to call her Ginny from now on because that's what Becky says she wants to name her. So the baby Ginny, you know, her safe place is her mother.
Yeah.
You know, the way that she gets fed and she gets her nutrients and she's able to grow and, you know, live is because of Becky.
Yeah.
And this movie, you know, brings out panic in Becky, which I've heard, like, you know, being panicked and stressful, like, really isn't good for, you know, a baby, specifically when the woman's pregnant. Obviously, it's not good for the mother either. And, you know, the heat that they are enduring, you know, makes Becky dehydrated, which eventually would make the baby dehydrated. Not being able to eat, obviously, that's one of the biggest ones. And then just, like, overexertion. You know, they're walking for a long time, sometimes, you know, running or speed walking, like, you know, whatever in the moment is.
Yeah.
And this movie, like, definitely plays upon, you know, how safe places can end up being a negative thing.
Yeah.
Again, with, you know, the baby, with the bowling alley, and even the chapel I've seen, because when we first meet Travis, again, he's driving to San Diego, because that's where he thinks that Becky and Cal are, and he stops at the chapel because he notices a van that looks extremely similar to Becky and Cal's. It ends up being theirs, and he pulls up into the church's or the chapel's parking lot. And you know, when I think of a church, like, that's a safe place. For me, obviously, you know, Parkway Bible Church, like, that's a safe place for me. But when he goes in, like, it's empty, and it looks like it hasn't had anybody in it for, you know, a long time, and it's kind of eerie. And he's, like, looking around, trying to see if there's anybody there. There's not. He even goes up to this one door and is trying to open it, and, like, you know, he can't open it. So it kind of has, like, a spooky feel to it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, in that scene, I was like, oh, like, you know, that's something, at least to me, like, that.
That would
is relatable, because that seems like, you know, that's a safe place for me.
Yeah.
And why I wanted to play off of the kind of how we affect our own safe places, especially when it comes to like mental health, you know, we might have a certain, you know, something that may not be exactly physical that would be like a safe place. Like, for example, if you went on like a trip, you know, a vacation to
Puerto Rico,
sure.
Sure.
You know, that vacation where you had, like, you know, a great time, you know, were very happy, like, that might be a safe place for you if you're feeling down or whatever, you remember
Puerto
that.
Puerto Rico, every time you're sad.
True. Or for some people, it might be, like, you know, listening to a certain song or to a certain artist. It could even be just, you know, doing something like painting or reading or making music. Like, you know, kind of having those things that are your safe places. I feel like there's a lot of times where we almost, like, sabotage ourselves.
Yeah.
Because we start to make that kind of safe space, that kind of safe thought, we can turn that negative very, very fast. You know, you can just be lying down. You already know you've been having, like, you know, not the best day. And you're thinking about that trip, and then it turns into, oh, yeah, well, when I was on that trip, I accidentally spilled food on the waiter or something, and it was so embarrassing because everybody was looking and, you know, whatever. And we start, like, you know, overthinking and, you know, turning and thinking about, like, the bad things. And I feel like that ends up happening in this movie. Yeah. They start getting into their own heads.
Yeah.
They start getting into their own heads and start overthinking everything. And they start, you know, thinking about the negative things when they should be at least trying to, you know, kind of look on the bright side, you know, rather than overthinking and starting to panic, you know,
yes.
trying to be strong and think positively so that they can get out of
yes.
that
sometimes
negative situation.
Sometimes people just have to, you know, that's why a lot of, that's why that saying sometimes works, like, don't think, just do.
Okay.
You know, like, they were told numerous times throughout the, like, they were told, like, a couple times throughout the story, like, what to do.
Yeah.
They were kind of told how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But then they let this guy, obviously, which is understandable, like, play with their emotions.
Mm-hmm.
But if they just went and they knew the action of what they had to do,
yeah.
they just went and did it and didn't think about what could happen to them in the end because, like, they all they had to do was just kill that guy.
Yeah.
Because, like, who was it? Travis ended up killing Ross. And then
mm-hmm.
it was over. And then, like, Travis touched it. So they could have
yes.
just went in, all of them, they could have just went after him.
Yes. They definitely could have overpowered him.
Yeah, like, they had complete majority over them. Like,
yeah.
They would have killed him.
Yeah, it's definitely, yeah, they definitely were overthinking and kind of more thinking about the negative
aspects,
things that would,
yeah.
the negative aspects of it rather than, I guess, the logistical,
yeah.
the true thing that was going to happen. And, you know, obviously they did in multiple
yeah.
time frames, as we see, you know, multiple of Cal's dead body.
Bodies, yeah. Cal dies a lot.
Yeah, well.
What a sucker.
So, yeah, so I feel like, this is going to sound so weird, but, like, you know, just remember, you know, try not, I know it's hard because I do it all the time where, you know, I overthink things. And I start thinking about, you know, oh, well, this is, like, a negative thing that's going to come from it or whatever. But taking a step to just be like, okay, do you know what? You know, this negative thing might happen, but there's going to be so many other positive parts of it that, you know, who cares if there's only one negative?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, trying to, you know, force yourself to think about the positive things and then end up doing, you know, whatever
yeah.
you want to. I just think that's something that, you know, everybody, including myself, like, you know, try to remember. Now I want to talk about the end because I really liked the ending.
Yeah.
I feel
I
like this, I liked it because, I mean, it's, again, it's so weird because of the whole time essence of it,
yeah.
but, like, the main characters die. Cal and Becky die. Travis ends up, you know, killing Ross and then touching the rock to gain its powers.
Mm-hmm.
And we end up, you know, we find out, we see that Travis decides to, like, use the powers for good.
Yeah.
He doesn't turn into Ross and want to, like, you know, kill everyone.
Doesn't, like, kill, like, Toby.
Yeah. He ends up taking Tobin and, you know, they do a weird, like, you know, switcheroo of the scene where he's, like, lifting him up and then puts him into a room. And it turns out that that room is what was behind that door in the chapel.
Yeah.
So it's almost as if, like, you know, again, it's so weird talking about video games, but, like, in a video game where it's, like, you know, you complete the level and then you start at the next one.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. So, anyways, once he gets put into that room, he leaves the room, he sees that he's in the chapel, and he's like, oh, you know, he remembers this place.
Yeah.
So it's almost like he went on to the next level, but because Cal and Becky died, they have to restart
the level.
Yeah. So when he leaves the chapel, Becky and Cal's car, like, isn't in the parking lot anymore. He steps up, he's kind of like, you know, where am I? And he sees that Cal and Becky actually, like, just pulled up to the grass area.
Yeah.
And he sees, like, Becky get out of the car, standing there, and he hears another version of himself yelling for them. Just like what happened at the beginning, where he's like, help, I'm lost in here. Like, come find me. And, you know, as we see in the beginning, they're kind of like, okay.
Yeah.
And they go in. You. So he runs up to them and is like, don't go in. Like, you're not going to be able to come back out. Like, it's a trap. And they're kind of like, whoa, like, you sound just like who's, like, in the grass. And he's like,
boy, I am this boy.
Literally. So, it, like, you know, that obviously for Cal and Becky is probably weird because they're like, what is happening?
Yeah.
But it's like, the next level for Toby is saving Becky and Cal.
Yeah.
It's almost like, you know, in a video game where if you were Becky and or Cal in that scenario, like getting like a power up or something to where you kind of almost skip that level.
Yeah.
Is pretty much what Toby was
to them. Yeah. They kind of like didn't have to do anything.
Yeah. So they agreed and they were like, oh, like, let's take you with us. They kidnapped him technically. But I mean, whatever. So they drove away. They didn't end up going into the grass, which saves them, which is like, it, you know, jumps back to what we were talking about before with like the choices affecting,
yeah,
you know, the different events and outcomes. So because they chose to listen to Toby, they did have to go into the grass. They didn't, you know, have to go through the whole thing over again.
Yeah.
Which I think it was pretty cool. I liked that ending. I, you know, didn't really know how they were going to end it, but
that's true.
I appreciate that. And I actually like how they made the chapel be like, you know, the way that you're saved is when you go to the church.
Yeah.
You know, again, that's, you know, for me personally in my life, like, you know, I think that was a cool something that I could relate to where it's like, you know, the only time within the last, you know, X amount of time that Toby has felt safe was when he was at the church.
Yeah.
So that's just something that related to me. I really liked how they did that. I guess before we start to wrap it up, is there anything else you wanted to add?
I mean, I feel like this movie would be better to watch, like, with someone.
Because
then you guys would both be able to think. But I don't really have a lot to say about the movie. It was okay. I didn't enjoy it, but I didn't hate it. It was like, eh. Would I recommend it if you like thrillers or like, I don't know, kind of things where you have to think, then I guess it's for you.
Okay. But
for me, I don't like it. It was okay.
Yeah, I think I definitely agree that it would be better to watch with somebody because you can have like a little commentary.
Yeah.
Back and forth. I think, again, I'd have to agree with you. Like, I would recommend it if you're into, you know, kind of thriller psychological movies where you kind of have to think.
Yeah.
I personally am. That's probably my favorite like genre is like kind of psychological movies.
So
in total, overall, I enjoyed it. Thank you for, you know, joining me.
No problem.
And to you guys listening, thank you for you know, coming along this ride again. Yeah, we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Teen Fish. Welcome back, fishes.